how many of you have homeschooled before this school year we're in right now? All right. How many of you have not yet homeschooled at all? Great! Awesome. You are starting out right. Because when you take the trouble to find out what you need to know beforehand, you're going to save yourself a lot of heartache. Let's pray and ask for the Lord's blessing today. Heavenly Father, I thank you so much for giving us the privilege of being here together. And the more important privilege of being able to disciple our children and to serve you, Lord, and to show them what we are day to day, all day, every day. Father, please help us to point our children to you. Help us to serve you. Give me the words to say and give them the ears to hear what you would have us to do today. In Jesus' name, amen. You know, I remember when we first told our families, I don't have my PowerPoint up. I am not batting 1,000 this morning. I remember when we first told our families that we were going to homeschool. We decided that we were going to homeschool before we actually had children. And let's start the slideshow from the beginning. Ah, there we are. They thought we had gone off the deep end. They thought we were crazy. You know, both of our mothers grew up in homes that had alcoholic fathers. And their biggest goal for us, when they were raising us, was giving us a normal childhood. They really wanted us to have a normal childhood. Well, homeschooling wasn't normal to them. And that meant it must be something bad, something really bad. Well, some days we wondered if we had freaked out and gone off the deep end ourselves. You know, making the decision to homeschool is pretty scary. Suddenly you look ahead and you realize that everything depends on you. And it looks like a huge vista to conquer. You know, I think about the pioneers. I remember seeing a valley in the Sierra Nevadas that the pioneers had to cross to get to California. And I looked at it and I thought, I wouldn't want to cross it with earth movers and helicopters. How in the world did they face that in a wagon pulled by an ox? And sometimes I think when we start out homeschooling, we feel that way. We look ahead and we see these mountains of algebra and chemistry and things we didn't understand too well the first time. And then we see these deep valleys of, you know, what if we can't make it on just my husband's salary? What if my children turn out just like me? Stupid. You know, and you feel panicked inside. And then you start thinking about all the life skills you got to teach them about credit cards and checking accounts and sewing and cooking and auto repair. It's like the scales fall from your eyes and you suddenly realize all the things your child needs to know to become an adult. Well, what you got to remember is that stuff was your responsibility anyway. Because God gave you those children. And even if you delegate a portion of their education to someone else, it's still your responsibility. You're still going to answer to God for it. And so, are you wondering if you went off the deep end? If this is more than you can handle? Well, I'm telling you, I felt the same way. But for me, it was over 20 years ago. And I'm here to tell you that you can do this. I have 8 children who've been homeschooled from the beginning. Our oldest son is a student at Oxford University in England. He was never in a classroom until he went to college. You can do this, and it has been a tremendous blessing to our family. It may feel like you've been chucked into the deep water, maybe you chucked yourself into the deep water, but you can learn to swim there. This first year is very critical. I've been involved in homeschool leadership for a long time, over 17 years. And I've seen that most folks that make it through that first year and end up to be successful homeschoolers accomplish some of the same things. On the other hand, there's some homeschoolers that they pull their kids out of school and then they poop out after a few short months and they put them back in school and it's back and forth, and that's not good for anybody. You know, that really sabotages a child's education. But I want you to be one of the successful families, and I believe you can be, because there's 3 simple goals that I've noticed that successful families all seem to accomplish during their first year of homeschooling. They get relationships right, they develop a love of learning, and they get the basics done. I believe that if you determine to accomplish these three things, that you'll love homeschooling so much you will never stop till your last child has graduated. One of the biggest benefits of homeschooling is what it does for your family. We've seen again and again strong, unified families that really enjoy each other. Now, this is also one of the biggest challenges of the first year of homeschooling, because often we have to straighten out bad habits and restore some relationships. How many of you currently have children in school? Yeah, that's the ones I'm talking about. Okay, now first, unless they be agreed, there's one relationship though that you've got to get right immediately. The Word of God says, how can two walk together unless they be agreed? Well, a husband and wife have got to agree on homeschooling, or they are going to face some serious trials. Let me explain why. See, children know when their parents don't agree on something, and they will play you off against each other. They will jerk your chain around. They will play dad against mom and mom against dad, and it doesn't work very well. And our enemy takes advantage of it too, because our enemy will use the stress of a new thing to drive a wedge between mom and dad. Now, honestly, Scripture tells us as wives to submit to our husbands. If your husband is totally against homeschooling, I would urge you to wait. Now, not many homeschool leaders will tell you that, but this is a terrific thing you want to do, a terrific, awesome thing. But the timing is very important. Whoa. Okay, the timing is very critical. Can you hear me in the back? I feel like I'm not quite loud enough. It's fine? Okay. It is a very important thing that you want to do, but the timing is very important, because if your husband is adamantly opposed to it, chances are you're not going to make it. Now, if he says, well, I don't really support this, but you know, if you want to do it, that's all right. Well, he's given you permission, okay? But make sure you both understand the parameters, that you're in agreement about the plans you have, that ideally you pray together, you make a commitment together, because your marriage is foundational to your family. If you goof up your marriage, that's no way to take care of your children, okay? So make sure your marriage is right, that you are both in agreement that this is something that you can do, okay? Now, get things straight in your marriage first. Another relationship that's foundational to your homeschooling success is your relationship to the laws that govern us. Please make sure that you're in compliance with the homeschool laws of your province. How do you know how to do that? Well, I recommend going to HSLDA. Now, it's hslda.ca for Canadians. I'm sorry, that's a slide that I use in the United States. It's hslda.ca. That's the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And they are great folks. All the lawyers that work for HSLDA are homeschool dads themselves. And so they know the ropes, and they'll help you get right. Also, I recommend membership in HSLDA, because you may live in an area where homeschooling is never challenged. But HSLDA does a great job in watching the federal and the provincial, and in the states, the federal and the state governments, to make sure that any challenges to your homeschool freedom are brought to you and you can fight back. They do a great job doing that. They also do a great job supporting your provincial organization. You know, OCHEC is another great place. Be sure you get in touch with them, that you join them, that you get the information that you need so that you're in submission to the laws of your state. You can also learn more about the practical workings of the law from your local homeschool group. Now, there are also great places to get the encouragement and counsel you need to get going. And state homeschool groups, provincial homeschool groups that watch the legislature in your province, like OCHEC, are very, very important. For example, in the state of Georgia in the United States, never had any problems in 20 years of their homeschool law. One year, some legislator got a bee in his bonnet, and he introduced a law that would have radically restricted homeschooling in Georgia. Well, he didn't do it in the education committee. That happened in our state. In our state, the agency that oversees homeschoolers is completely separate from the public schools. Well, one day in a budget committee meeting, someone proposed a budget-saving move. Why don't we move the division of non-public education under the public schools? Well, if our state organization that I'm part of the board of directors had not been watching that, it would have radically changed homeschooling in our state. And no one would have known until it was too late. And so you need to support your state organization. You need to get in touch with them. That's the protection you need to homeschool, because you need encouragement and counsel. That's the protection that you need. Now, you also need local support, because there are going to be days that you wonder if something is wrong with you and something is wrong with your children. You really need another mom to say, yeah, my children have been wild today too. It must be the weather. And suddenly you say, oh, my children aren't horrible. I'm not a horrible mom. We've just had a bad day. Well, that local fellowship, getting together with other homeschoolers, getting to know them, will save your life, because you need that. You need other people who are homeschooling. Your children need other people who are homeschooling for perspective. You know, you need to be able to have friends who are going through the same things you're going through, that you can talk to and you can say, I just don't know what to do, but my child just isn't getting spelling at all. And you need an experienced mom to say, well, have you considered this? Or have you considered, maybe he's dyslexic, maybe he has this problem, maybe you need a different curriculum. That fellowship, that encouragement that you get when you feel like jerking your children bald-headed, as we say in the South, will help you make it through that first year. Now, you also need to realize that having local support opens up a world of possibilities to you, because there are things you can do together as a group that you can't do in your family. For example, in my county, we have contact football for homeschoolers, varsity all the way down to Mighty Mites. There's no way one family, no matter how many children you have, can run a football team. Okay? You can't play 11-man football on two teams out of one family. I haven't heard of it. Now, I have a lot of sons. I have six sons, but I've never heard of anybody having 22 sons. Not in this century. And so there are things that you can do together that you can't do apart. Another thing, our group has a homeschool history club. Well, that history club gets together and makes historical movies. Now, this has motivated my children so incredibly, because they love to compete. Most boys do. And when they said, oh, well, we're going to compete at the state history convention against all the public schools and private schools in our state, my boys were on it. Well, they began to produce independent Christian films. They became fascinated with history. They became history buffs. They know far more history than I do now, because of that enrichment from being with other homeschoolers, from competing with other people, from interacting with other people. And so I encourage you, that can be a huge blessing for you. Now, what you need to do to understand too is that that homeschool group, you know, I want to give you a word of caution. It's really tempting, especially if you live in an isolated area. How many of you live in a really rural area? Any of you, a few of you? If you live in an isolated area and it's a lot of work to get to a homeschool group, then you start thinking, well, you know, there's so much stuff on the net. I can just join a homeschoolers forum. I can get online and interact with people by email. I can join an email group, and I get all the support I need. Well, the problem with the net is you really never know who you're talking to. I remember one time on an email loop in our area, there was a woman that everyone went to for advice. She sounded very confident, very sure about what she was saying. Only she was always wrong. And I finally contacted her and I said, you know, I'm a little concerned here because what you said in the loop about compliance with our law is not true. This is the situation. She said, oh, I didn't know. You see, my oldest is 3. Thousands of homeschoolers have been taking her advice. They didn't know that she didn't know. But see, when you're in a homeschool group, you can look around, and when you're thinking of asking someone for parenting advice, you can take a bloody good look at their children. You can look at them and say, you know, I like the way these children are turning out. And I just realized, in the United States, that word is not considered cursing at all. I just realized I'm in Canada. It may be. Please forgive me if it is. Okay. You take a good look at their children, and you say, I like the way those kids are turning out. And then you turn to the parents and you say, I need to ask you a question. And when you ask them those questions, you have confidence in who you're asking. You know who you're talking to. And that is a very big difference. When you're asking someone about the homeschool law, you can look and say, this person's been homeschooling 15 years. They know what they're talking about. And that makes it so much more valuable than the advice you get on the internet, because you can see, the proof is in the pudding, you can see who they're interacting with. You can see what they're like. Now, another part of getting relationships right is discipline and respect in the home. And finally, your children is where we're going to focus now. Older children who are being taken out of school are a particular challenge. They're used to thinking that mom and dad are not the academic authority. Okay, if you have children in school, you know they'll come home and they'll say, well, my teacher said to do it this way. And you say, but honey, I think you're supposed to do it that way. Oh, my teacher said to do it this way. Have you heard that? Well, suddenly, you're the authority. And they're going to say, oh, mom, that's not the right way to do that. See, Mrs. Such and Such last year said to do it that way. Well, it's kind of a bit of a shock to them when you calmly say, honey, I'm your teacher now. And you're going to do it my way. And so there's lots of times children will challenge you again and again to find out, you know, it's just mom telling me to do math. Do I really have to do math? And they'll try you and they'll test you. And this is normal. You've got to stick to your guns and make sure they know that you've really got to do it. That there's no way to get out of it. Now, it really helps you if dad backs you up when he gets home. And this is where you guys being in agreement as a couple makes all the difference. You know, Hal says, I can remember Hal coming home from work, and he works from home now. I can remember him coming home from work. And he opened the door, and he said, so, what's for supper? Noticing that the kitchen was completely devoid of any food or anything. And he said, and I said, I'd like to go out. So, okay, where would you like to go? I'd like to go by myself. Okay, where are the children? They're all waiting for you in the laundry room. There are days like that, and that's normal. You're going to have to get your children under control, and some days you're going to have days like that even once they are under control. But when dad backs up mom, then you have the freedom just to keep moving and plow through. What you got to do, and this is really important to your success, is make an unwavering commitment to make it through at least one full year. That means I'm not giving up, no matter how bad it gets, no matter how much people laugh at me, no matter how much pressure my family puts on me, no matter how little we get done, or how frustrated my child gets, we're doing this for 1 year. Now, this has some tremendous benefits, okay? Because when your child says, I want to go back to school, which you almost certainly will at some point if you're taking him out of school, then you say, okay, we'll talk about that next summer. We're not going to discuss it this year. We've made a full year commitment. And when your mother says, I think you're crazy. I think you need to put the children back in school. So, well, I'll consider that. We'll discuss it next summer. You know, we've made a commitment this year. We're not going to seesaw back and forth with our children. We've made a commitment to make it through the year. It gives you an out with those who are criticizing you and trying to change you. And also, if you make it through one full complete year homeschooling, almost never will you go back. Because, but from the first of the year to the end of the year, you learn so much and grow so much that by the end of the year, you don't want to go back. You don't want to stop homeschooling, and neither does your child. And so make an unwavering one-year commitment and let everybody know about it. This year, the Young family is going to homeschool. Okay? Now, another thing that will keep you going is to develop a love of learning. I want you to enjoy this adventure and develop a love of learning in you and your children. That's one of the distinctives of homeschool families. They're always learning. You know, even on vacation, it's the homeschool family that's exploring and learning. You know, on the way to the lake, one child grabs a fish guide so they can identify the fish. Another, a bird guide. Mom grabs the binoculars, and Dad decides to stop at the farm museum on the way because everybody loves to learn. And no longer is learning in a little tiny box that's the very painful, unpleasant, boring thing I do all day, every day is my job. And then comes the blessed relief of the weekend and summers. Instead, learning becomes an adventure. It becomes something you love, that all of you love together, and it becomes something you interact about as a family. How can you develop that love of learning? Well, one way you can build a love of learning in your children is to read real books. Especially if your children have been in school, they likely believe that learning is a crushing bore. And you're going to have to get over that. Now, this is really hard because we grew up in schools that were a crushing bore. And so when we think of schoolwork, when you're a new homeschooler, you think, okay, let me get my 9 textbooks for my 9 separate subjects in each subject for each child. And yes, I know that this is really hard, but every page must be done. Okay. Well, a great way to help your children relearn the excitement of learning something new is to get away from the textbooks. To do, for example, a unit study. Say you have elementary. Does anyone here have high schoolers that they're going to be homeschooling for the first year? Ah, one. We will address that in a minute. If you have elementary age students, say that you want to study the history of your province. Okay, well, there's 2 ways to do that. I am sure that the Ontario schools publish a history textbook. That's probably a crushing bore. In fact, when we were in Louisiana, we went to the textbook depot and we picked up a Louisiana history book. And I was really excited about it because Louisiana has fascinating history. You know, the kingfish, Earl K. Long, and, you know, gamblers and riverboat pirates and the War of 1812. I just thought, this is going to be gripping. And I opened it up, and it was one of the most boring things I've ever read in my life. Earl K. Long, outrageous governor, criminal. They found boxes of money stuffed in the walls of the governor's mansion when he was shot. Okay? Yeah. And it says, the educational policies of Earl K. Long were a radical departure from the previous administration. It was so dry. And I thought, this is wrong. This is wrong. Tell what's really going on. And so instead, get real books for your children. Get real. You want to teach your children the history of your country? Go out and get biographies of your country's heroes. You know, have them read the real stories of what happened, preferably in their own words. If you can find autobiographies, things written at the time, those are really awesome, especially if your children are older. You know, when your children are young, though, you know, get simple biographies. Teach them the stories of history. Show them God's hand in history and how he worked and preserved your nation, how he preserved the different nations of the world and how he used them. And when you see that, you know, that's a very different thing, isn't it? You know, instead, if we're going to study the Louisiana history, I get some books about some of the heroes and some of the anti-heroes of Louisiana history. And I say to my children, okay, so by looking at this through a biblical lens, tell me, how does this man stack up? Looking at this through a biblical lens, what do you think God was doing in this era of our history? and it changes your children's whole perspective. You know, when you read books of people that were there, it's so different because it's a story then. It's better than fiction because it's real. And so, if you want to study, for example, World War II, go to the library and get every book you can find on World War II. Bring it home in a big laundry basket and set it in the den. And read them aloud to your children. When your children are bored and have nothing to do, encourage them to read them. And the whole family read those things. Now, what do you think is going to happen at the dinner table then? You're going to start talking about it. It's going to start growing and interacting among people in your family. You're going to have discussions. Your children are going to start playing that they're in the Pacific Theater. You know, your girls are going to be talking about make or mend and the challenges of the home front. They're going to be talking about Victory Gardens. You know, it's going to become an organic, a living thing, something that's really happening. And it's going to be so much more exciting than the history that I knew, because the history I knew, I remember 10th grade world history, and the coach stood there, okay, and he read the history book to us in class for an hour each day. Oh, it was horrible. I see someone out had, maybe you had the same one I did. We can do better than that. We can give our children a fascination for the truth. You know, we really enjoyed reading parts of the Journal of Christopher Columbus. It was a fascinating thing because our children have learned not to just believe what modern history says about Christopher Columbus, because most of it is not true, because they do not understand his motivations. When you start really learning about, when you read his journal and you find out that he had a tremendous desire to bring the gospel, to bring the truth of Christianity to a new world. You say, is this the same guy I learned about in school? And so, you know, so how do you know? What's the right interpretation of history? Well, when you read their own words, then you're going to know, aren't you? It doesn't have to go through anyone's filter. You're going to read what really happened. And that's so exciting to children. I know that sounds a little different than when we grew up. You may be thinking, well, how would they learn what third graders are supposed to learn? Well, let me tell you a little secret. There's no such thing. Because you know what? What they learn in North Carolina in the third grade is different than what they learn in Ontario in the third grade, which is different than what they learn in Newfoundland in the third grade, which is different than what they learn in California in the third grade, which is different than what they learn in England in the third grade, which is different from any of the private schools in those areas. There is no set body of knowledge the third grader has to know. Now, am I saying pitch out organization? Absolutely not. Because in some subjects, math in particular, in English, there's got to be a foundation. You build on the foundation step by step, right? But when it comes to science and history, there's a body of knowledge they need to learn by the time they go to high school. But it doesn't matter what order they learn it in. It doesn't matter whether you study earth science first or astronomy first, or whether you study the World War II period or the colonial period first. That doesn't matter, does it? You know, what matters is that they learn it, that they remember it. How many of you remember what you studied in fifth grade history? I don't see any hands. Well, my children remember what they studied several years ago. You know why? Because we read real books and we did real things to drive it home to them. Like, for example, we studied Rome one year. And at the end of the year, we had a Roman feast and we invited their grandparents. Everybody wore togas and we reclined and we ate the kind of food the Romans ate. And it seems kind of silly, but you know what? Our children still remember that. And it was the year 1997. Wow. Now, I can't remember what I studied 14 years ago, you know. But when you make your learning more living, when you think outside the desk, it changes things. Because see, homeschooling is so effective in part because we use the tutorial method, one-on-one instruction. This can be a bit of a shock to to those of us who grew up in institutional schools. One mom came to our homeschool group a few years ago, and she looked just awful. Now, I mean awful, okay? Her hair was not brushed. She looked kind of haggard, you know, lines around her eyes. And being a good homeschool leader, I came and I put my arm around her and I said, "Hey, honey, how you doing?" And she said, "Awful. How do you do it with six children? I have four and I'm dying." I said, "Well, tell me about your day." And she said, "Well, first we come downstairs and I bought desk forums. It's just like real school." See, she was a school teacher before she quit homeschool. And she said, "I got four little desks, and I just line them up. And I bought a chalkboard, too, so it'd be like real school, right? And first I teach the first math lesson. And then I teach the second math lesson. And then I teach the third math lesson. Then I teach the fourth math lesson. And then we all do our seat work, and we sit there till everybody's done with their math." Now, I see an experienced homeschooler over there grimacing because it was taking them 13 hours to do school. It was killing them. And I said, "Honey, let me tell you about our school day. What I do is we get up in the morning, and everybody has morning chores. Everybody has a job to do. Someone cleans up the schoolroom. Someone makes breakfast. Someone takes out the trash and rotates the dishwasher. Someone starts the laundry. And then we gather together and we have devotions. And we worship together as a family. And then I give my older children a list of what they need to accomplish that day. And I'll tell them, you know, come to me before you do your chemistry lesson. We need to talk about it. Or come to me before you do this history. I have some concerns about it." And then they go off and they work. And they come to me if they have any questions. And my younger children, I put them at the little table next to me. I have a recliner so I can hold our toddler, okay? And I have a little child's table next to it, my school books and a bookcase right here. I believe in comfort. There's no reason you have to be uncomfortable when you're homeschooling, okay? And in fact, let me tell you a little secret. You really don't have to get dressed. Uh-oh, did I let out a secret? Uh-oh, okay. You really don't have to get dressed. Pajamas are okay. For them too, and it will not destroy them forever. I promise you that they will not try to wear pajamas to work when they get grown up, okay? They're smart enough to figure this out. Okay, and I would say, all right, then I would start this child doing some seat work, working on a worksheet or something, while I went over the math lesson with this one. And then while that one was working, I'd work with the other one. It's like a one-room schoolhouse. How many of you read Laura Ingalls Wilder books, Little House on the Prairie? They're awesome. Okay, how did her school work? Well, she sat up at the front and she called a grade to her. And that she'd work with that grade while everybody else was working and then send them back and call a different one up. Well, that's the way that homeschooling works. It's like tutoring. And that makes it one of the most effective ways to educate. The tutoring, one-on-one tutoring, is, research has proven, is the most effective way to teach somebody something. Because you don't waste any time. See, if I'm teaching math to 30 kids, I have to explain it in 15 different ways to make sure those 30 kids are going to understand it, right? Well, and some of them will have gotten it the first way, and some of them won't get it after 15. Well, see, when you're teaching your child, then you can start explaining. If he understands it on the first one, you're done. And he goes and he does the problems. And it's okay if a math lesson lasts 90 seconds. On the other hand, if you explain it 15 ways and he still doesn't have it, you can give him 15 more tomorrow. And he doesn't get left behind. And so it's very efficient because you spend the time only where it's needed. And so that means homeschooling takes a lot less time than it does to teach school. If you're going to teach 30 children all day, you're going to be there from 8 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. But if you teach your children at home, even if you teach, I'm teaching 6 this year, even if you're teaching 6, you can probably get done with the part that requires your personal attention by noon. Now, your teenagers are going to have to still be working in the afternoon, but you can probably get done by noon. Now, I have to get up early.
have to start early. I can't finish by noon if I'm starting at 10. I have to start at more like 7:30. Okay, but still, it doesn't take as long because you're more efficient. Now, another way to develop a love of learning in your children is to use hands-on and hearts-on education. Please don't waste the incredible opportunity to use hands-on projects in field trips and other things to get our children to do more than just rattle off facts that they won't remember next week. This was probably 15 years ago. We took our children on a two-week field trip to study the Civil War in the United States. And we traveled through Virginia and Pennsylvania and Maryland and visited every Civil War battleground and site in those states. And went camping. It took us about 2 weeks. Well, when we got home, our homeschool group had a history day. And the children made little projects and they did presentations. Well, my 5 or 6 year old son at the time, I can't remember how old Caleb was, wanted to do a presentation about Bull Run. That's what the Yankees call it. The Southerners call it Manassas. He wanted to do a presentation about Manassas, the battle that happened just outside Washington. And I said, well, son, you know you can't read yet. So you're going to have to memorize this presentation. He said, I'm okay with that. So he made a salt map of the Manassas battlefield. Okay? Kind of like molding Play-Doh, okay? And he dictated a presentation to me, which I typed out, and we practiced it several times. Well, he stood up there, and he presented this presentation. And afterwards, this grumpy old man, I think it was somebody's grandfather, came up, and he clearly thought we had done it for him. Son, I'd like to ask you a few questions about this topic. And Caleb said, sure. The guy had to beg him to stop. Because Caleb knew all about Bull Run. Because see, instead of reading some dates and facts in a history book with no context, he had stood where General Early had stood when he yelled, there stands Jackson like a stone wall, rally behind the Virginians. And he pretended to be General Jeb Early. And so it was living in his mind, and he'll never forget it. He knew all about that battle. And see, budget constraints in our area restrict field trips to once a semester, sometimes once a year. Our children went to a history convention the other day, and it was about half the size it was last year. And they said, Mom, why did hardly anybody come? I said, well, the budget has gotten bad in our state, and so they're not allowed to go on field trips like to the history convention, even though they have projects competing. And they said, oh, how sad. Well, see, you can go on field trips all the time with your children. When things start getting boring and you start thinking school becomes a drudge, then you get in the car and you go somewhere. And you go to a museum, you go to a historic site. And you learn hands-on. It's just incredibly motivational to get out of the house. You know, these things are memorable, but they're also eternal. Because when we learn together, when we can give our children the benefit of a mature Christian perspective on what they're learning, those are things that impact them forever. You know, it's hard when you're starting homeschooling and you so badly want to succeed and you feel such a lack of confidence. It's hard to say when you know you're 2 days behind on your workbook to put the workbook aside and do something outside the home. But it can really help. It can really help you focus on what's important in your schooling. Because you know what? Doing every worksheet in that book is not as important as your children remembering what they're learning. Doing every worksheet in that book is not as important as giving them experiences that they'll remember all their life. You know, it was hard for me one November a few years ago to let my children participate in, let me see if I can say this right, NaNoWriMo, got it. National Novel Writing Month. And it's a challenge. Adults take on 50,000 words to try to produce 50,000 words, good, bad, or indifferent, in the novel they've had percolating around in their head in 1 month. Now, kids set lower goals. And I thought, we're so far behind, and this is one of the months we're not traveling, and, you know, they're going to spend so much time on this. But that year, one of my sons made his goal. He wrote 20,000 words. And the next year, I'm going to cry thinking about it, his brother, who could barely write a paragraph, wrote 15,000 words. Because he saw what his brother did and wanted to compete, it was his younger brother that had done that. And he got motivated. For the first time, I've been trying to motivate him in writing for years. He got motivated. He'd just gotten a laptop. It was a gift from my brother. And he found out that typing wasn't near as painful as writing. And that thing that I stewed about missing school, I stewed about them not paying enough attention to school that month, accomplished what I'd tried to accomplish in school for years. And so you got to get some perspective. You know, because the love of learning is often gained in the real world. You know, if you have a child who is interested in getting out and becoming an accountant. Yes, I have a child interested in becoming an accountant. He's going to take a job with an accountant this summer. Because it's out in the real world that you really find out what you love and how it really works. You know, our doctor told us one time that there were a ton of people in school that didn't, that were in medical school that were not cut out to be doctors. They didn't have the stomach for it. They would throw up when they were out there having to take care, having to do the job that they had spent hundreds of thousands of dollars to learn how to do. He said, well, it's really sad. It's heartbreaking. They usually end up becoming public health people or hospital administrators, but they wasted all those hundreds of thousands of dollars. You know, that's what motivated us to take our child who was interested in medicine and send him to an anatomy and physiology camp where they dissected a cadaver. Because I'd rather know it on this end than on the other end. And so real learning happens in the real world. Now, the last one is get the basics done. This is so important. Bible is basic. Hal tells me, you don't have time not to get Bible done. If you don't have time to have devotions with your children, you don't have time to do school. Because that's the most important thing. That's why we're homeschooling, is we want to pass on our faith to our children. And so how dare I think that I can just let it go by? But there's some secrets here. You got to keep it doable. Because what happens lots of times is we get all head up, I'm going to do devotions with the children, and we sit down and we spend 2 hours together worshiping God, and it's so awesome, and we read hymns, and we do memory work, and we talk through the catechism, and I preach a little sermon to them from what we're studying. But then the next day I look and I think, oh boy, I don't want to do devotions yesterday, we didn't get anything else done. Keep it doable. Start small. Because it's better that your children hear the Word of God, worship and pray to the Lord a few minutes every day than 2 hours a couple times a year. Okay? So keep it doable and make it first. Do it first thing. Because when you worship the Lord first, then that changes the whole day for you. It puts a whole day into perspective. Now, what you gotta do is get something in reading, writing, and math on their level. Okay? Get a curriculum in reading, writing, and math. When you go downstairs, and I know you're thinking, what am I supposed to buy? Get something reading, writing, math on their level. Language arts, math. And as much as possible, combine the other subjects. You know, get some unit study-based things. There's a lot of good stuff down there. You know, look around and find something that appeals to you. Because let me tell you something. You're going to make a mistake. You're going to buy something you hate. And that's okay, because at the end of this year, you're going to know so much more about homeschooling and your child and their learning style and your teaching style that you're going to be an expert by next year compared to where you are now. And so just go buy something that appeals to you. It's a learning experience. And if it doesn't work for you, chuck it out and sell it on the used curriculum board and buy something else. You know, it's okay. But you know, understand, it's all right to make mistakes in your curriculum. It won't rot your child's education to do that. Now, if you're starting out high school, then you're going to need to figure out what courses they need this year so that they can be on level to graduate at the end. You need to figure out where you want them to be at the end to be prepared to be admitted to college or to be prepared for the career that you want them to go into or they want to go into or they're prepared to enter the military, or whatever their goals are, and you need to work back from that senior year. And I've got a CD downstairs that explains how to do that. That you need to work back so that what you do this year will be the foundation that you need so that they get to graduate on time and do what the Lord's calling them to do. But in the elementary years, the middle school years, combine them. Do history together as a family. Do science together as a family. Because it will bless you. It will be so much fun. It will increase the unity of your family. And then get them done. Okay, you've got to get Bible, language arts, and math done this year. Okay? The other stuff, let me tell you a little secret. The Lord will stand in the gaps. And if you fall behind and you don't get all your science done this year, you can get twice as much done next year. It's not like math. If you fall behind in math, you're in trouble. It's hard to catch up. But if you fall behind in history, you can double up. You can learn more. So focus this first year on reading, writing, and math. Because if they learn to do those things well, they can learn a whole lot on their own. That'll be the foundation that you build the rest of homeschooling on, okay? Now, as I said, but how do I know what I'm supposed to buy? You don't, but you will. It's okay to make mistakes. It's all learning. Now, let's talk about mapping a route really quick. Okay, you need to be thinking about, after you pick out your curriculum, sit down and say, okay, I have a year to do this in, if this is a one-year curriculum. How many lessons am I going to need to do each week? Typical school year is 40 weeks. I recommend you plan 36 weeks. Because that gives you about a week every quarter for catching up, or for goofing off, or for taking field trips. It gives you some wiggle room. How much do I need to do every week to do this in 36 weeks? Okay. Then each week, you'll sit down and figure out, okay, this is what I need to do this week. How much do I need to do each day in each subject? And think about what you have planned for the day. So if you have a day you've got 3 doctor's appointments, then you don't plan the science experiments for that day. You plan the science experiments for the day you got nowhere to go. Okay? Now, and realize that it's your school. You have the freedom to plan it however you want. For example, if your husband's going on a business trip somewhere interesting, go with him. We went to Boston one year and we took a field trip every day for 2 weeks. It was awesome. We went somewhere in the morning, and then after Hal got out in the afternoon, we took him and went somewhere in the evening. We learned so much. We had such a rich experience. One year, we had the incredible opportunity to take all our children to China with us. You know what I did? I pitched out our language studies for that year. I pitched out our history. We studied Chinese history. We studied Mandarin language. And you know what? It was an incredible year. It was, you know, we went for 4 weeks at the end of the school year. And I found out at Christmas where we were going. So I just changed the whole thing, changed all our plans mid-year. But I was so glad I did, because it made that experience so much richer for my family. And so as you plan, you're going to have to be flexible. There's going to be days, weeks, months, years where challenges come. We had a baby born with a heart defect last January. Hal was diagnosed with cancer. Things are going to come up, and you're going to have to adjust. But see, when you're homeschooling, you have more freedom. You have more freedom to have a lighter year this year, a heavier year that year, to give your children something, to choose curricula that they can do more independently one year, and then choose more teacher-oriented stuff another year. You have the freedom to do that. See, this year is laying a foundation for your children's future. As you focus on giving your children the tools of learning, on reading, writing, math, that gives them what they need to learn independently all their lives. See, the foundation affects the entire building. It changes everything. And you're preparing them not just for the next few years of homeschooling, but you've got to focus on the most important things so the whole building will be straight, strong, true. So you got to make Christ your cornerstone, get your relationship straight, help your child grasp the beauty and excitement of learning, and stick to the basics. Because these 3 simple goals will bring you through the year and set you on the right path. Now, you know, homeschooling has been an incredible journey for our family. Like I said, we've been homeschooling We got involved in the homeschool movement actually before our children were born in 1986. It's a long time ago. Y'all can do the math. And I'm so excited to see so many people here who are brand new to it. Because you know what? I know a little bit about that water you're about to jump into, and I know it's going to be the adventure of your lives. You know, I don't regret starting out. I don't regret homeschooling. In fact, I look back and I'm so thankful. I'm so thankful for the relationships we have with our children. You know, our son in England, you know, no one would think twice if he never got in touch with us. But he calls us all the time. He got a calling plan just so he could call us cheap. He Skypes us and gives us a little window into his life. He asks for our advice and interacts with us because we have a great relationship. Relationship far different than most of us had with our parents when we were 21. You know, I look at the relationship my children have but with their siblings. You know, our little Katie, who's 2, loves Samuel, who's 14, because they have something in common. They both love animals. Now, to her, all animals are fwuff-fwuffs, okay? Except lizards. It has to have fur to be a fwuff-fwuff. And so Samuel will say, when she's really fractious and giving me a hard time and I'm trying to, like, finish a keynote talk or something for you guys, Samuel will say, "Hey, Katie, let's go watch fwuff-fwuffs." And he'll get her up in his lap and he'll get his computer and he'll open something like All Creatures Great and Small, and they watch something that has fwuff-fwuffs in it. And they have a tremendous relationship that they would never have if he were off in high school. And she was at home, and he didn't see her but an hour or two in the evenings. Instead, you know, they have a relationship that I believe will last all their lives. You know, they love each other. You just ought to see him light up when he sees that little girl. It's just precious to me. You know, the really neat thing about accomplishing these 3 goals this year, you know, getting all your relationships straight with the Lord, your family, your government, and your child, of restoring a love of learning for you and your children, of getting those basics done, is accomplishing those goals will make homeschooling a joy to you. You know, you may have wondered why homeschoolers are so fanatical about it. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed that the people you know that are homeschoolers can't stop talking about it? And they're always trying to push you into homeschooling. You ever felt that way? Some of you probably feel kind of pushed to be here. Okay? Well, it's because it becomes a lifestyle of learning. It very much fulfills Deuteronomy 6, where it says that, you know, we should teach our children as we rise down, as we rise up, and as we lay down, as we walk in the way. It's a joy and a pleasure to do that with our children. I want you to share that. And those homeschoolers have been nagging you, want you to share it too. It's a lifestyle of learning in which life is one big field trip. And so I want to thank you for listening today. I hope it's been an encouragement to you as you start out this first year. I want to ask you to come by our table. We have a book called Raising Real Men that was just named this past week, Christian Small Publishers Book of the Year. Thank you. We have a lot of other resources. We have a Getting Started series with 5 workshops all about getting started homeschooling. You know, how do you manage with a house full of children? You know, how do you start when you have just preschoolers? You know, there's a lot of helpful information out there. We also have, for our book, the Mom and Dad Special. I always try to tell people about this. We have an audiobook version because moms kept saying that dad doesn't have time to read. And so we made an audiobook version, but then the parents would stand at our booth and argue. Mom would say, "It's never quite enough in the house for me to listen to an audiobook." And Dad would say, "Well, I want an audiobook because I don't have time to read. I want to listen in the car." So we're about family unity. You know, we teach about biblical family life. So we made a Mom and Dad Special that you can get them both together cheaper than you can apart. We have some things for your boys out there. There's wooden hero swords, and each sword comes with the story of the hero that it's named after. And we have Hero Tales from American History, which, although you're not American, they're great stories of incredible characters from history. And because Theodore Roosevelt, an American president, wrote it with the intention of teaching character qualities to children. He wrote it over 100 years ago. And so it brings out character qualities in those heroes. And Hal and I wanted to make it more interesting, so we made an audiobook out of it, and we added sound effects. So if they're on a ship, you hear the ship creaking, and you hear the cannon fire, and if they're walking through the woods like George Rogers Clark, you know, you hear the crickets, and you hear the Indian footsteps in the woods. It's really fun. Please join us on the web at raisingrealmen.com. We have a blog. We talk about all these things and many others there. We also have one of the top 5% of pages on Facebook. It's at facebook.com/raisingrealmen. There's over 5,000 people out there discussing raising godly sons, and we just love to have you there. Now, how are we doing on time? We have a few minutes for questions. Is there anyone who has a question? I know you're brimming over with questions, but you're probably thinking, I don't know if I want to say this in front of everybody. Go ahead. Everybody's in the same boat. Any questions? Oh, who will be the first brave character to say, I don't know it all? Because, you know what? I don't know it all either. No. Even though I'm standing here. Even though I've homeschooled 20 years. Yes?
May I recommend a book?
Sure.
There's a book downstairs called Kathy Duffy's 100 Best Picks.
Ah, that's a good one.
And she has analyzed, well, obviously more than 100 different curriculum styles and flavors. But she has introductory chapters talking, helping you figure out what kind of teacher you would be.
Good.
And an analysis of what your children would be, whether they would be considered like a Wiggly Willy who doesn't like to sit still, or Perfect Paula who likes everything run by rules. And then she analyzes all this curriculum based on what would be good for a wiggly kid, what would be good for teaching two kids at the same time, how much parental involvement is needed for such and such a course. $25 is the best investment you'll ever make on books.
Excellent.
Really, really good. Kathy Duffy's 100 Best Picks. It's a green book with a bunch of apples on it.
Any other comments, thoughts, or questions?
You can find that online, too.
Yep. Yes?
I got a question.
Sure.
I'm a long-haul truck driver, so I don't do much of the homeschooling myself. My wife does all of it.
Uh-huh.
I just find that every time I come home after 2-3 weeks, they change so much every single time. It's hard for me to keep up with how they're changing. Like, they're only 5 and 2.
Oh, yes. But, yeah, they grow so fast at that age.
I just want to make sure that I, you know, keep with them a good relationship in that regard.
I have some ideas about that. We've done some long distance stuff too. How, in fact, in February, I was in Singapore for a couple of weeks. The question was, this gentleman is a long haul truck driver. Sometimes it's 2 or 3 weeks between stops at home. And he finds his children change so much during that time. How can he stay plugged in and do his job as a father when that's happening? I think one thing is to stay in frequent touch with the family. Skype is free if you have an internet connection. We use that extensively because you can video chat through Skype if you have a laptop that has a web camera. And that really helps that 2-year-old. My 2-year-old has really been helped to connect with her brother and with her dad as they're away by seeing them. And I think of it, Hal tries to be a prayer warrior for us and to protect us in prayer and cover us in prayer. And so I try to let him know what we're going through during the day. Get an unlimited text plan on your phones. You know, it might cost you $5 or $10 a month. But that way your wife can text you during the day and say, oh, big success, he got all his spelling words right. Or, oh, awful day, please pray, such and such is in a tremendous snit. You know? And that will help you to stay plugged in and will also help her to know that you're still covering her even though you're away. You know, but communication is critical in those things. And also, don't worry about not being able to participate in day-to-day homeschooling. We find that very few fathers have the time to be involved in the day-to-day homeschooling. So why are fathers important? Because fathers cast the vision for the family. Fathers think more philosophically than women do. And so the father should be out there thinking about philosophical direction for their family. Where are we headed? What do we want to accomplish by this? You know, what kind of things will help us do that? In casting the vision for your family, that takes a big burden off your wife because she knows to what direction you have. So when she has those daily decisions to make, she can say, well, this is important to my husband.
this would make the right decision here. And so by using your unique gifts, you can still be involved on a daily basis in a very important way, even though you may never see a math lesson. You know? I don't know if that helps at all.
It does, thanks.
Yes?
How do you prepare the transition? Because, you know, you're moving away from, it's not moving away, you're a mother and a tutor, it's a home and a school, it's a student and a child. I mean, how do you balance the two?
I think the first thing, and can I get some volunteers to pass out newsletter cards? If I can get 2 volunteers, you can come get a free CD at my table. If you'll pass these out and then collect them at the end, okay? I think one thing is to not make an artificial difference. Because we start out thinking of school in a little box because that's the way we were raised. And as you homeschool, it becomes something your family is more than something your family does. You know, this is something we do. We study together. And people are really worried that the stress of making your children do schoolwork and is going to make them destroy your relationship. But really it doesn't, any more than making them eat their vegetables or making them clean up their rooms. It's just another task that you give them to do. And so I think don't make an artificial distinction. This is something our family does. We do school, we do chores, we do community service, we serve in our church. And the children, if you're pulling them out of school, we'll try to make a distinction. Don't let them. You know, just say, yeah, I'm your mom. I'm also your teacher, just like I'm also sometimes your laundress and your cook. You know, it's time for you to start learning how to do the laundry and cooking, by the way. You know? Teach them that too. It won't destroy your relationship. Not if you focus on going about it the right way. Okay, now we are out of time. Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to see you. I'm so excited because you know what? You guys are my favorite homeschoolers, those brand new homeschoolers that are starting out right. Thank you very much.